It's over. The Golden State Warriors return to a familiar place. They're on top of the NBA world. The fourth title in 8 years. The Dubs dynasty is still very much alive.
Breaking news out of the NBA, Kenny Atkinson deciding not to take the Hornets head coaching job, according to ESPN. Atkinson will instead remain with the Warriors as the team's lead assistant.
Thanks again for listening to the Sportstown Podcast. I'm your host, JJ Peters. On today's episode of the podcast, we have a first-time guest. We have Kyle Lee from the Baseline NBA Podcast. You can also check him out at 19 Media. I believe all the links are down in the description below. We pretty much talk about the recap of the finals, the Warriors winning their fourth title in 8 years, and this is their sixth time being there in 8 years. We also talked about where their dynasty ranks. Does Steph Curry rank in the top five or top 10, or where does he rank overall? Of all time. Is he a top five point guard of all time? Pretty much all those questions. We also had what happened to Boston. Does Boston need to upgrade at point guard this year? If not, what do they need to do to get back to the finals? We also talk about some other things, upcoming thing, or we also talk about some things not known or not the NBA finals, like Kenny Atkinson deciding not to go to Charlotte and staying in Golden State, it looks like. Then we also talk about who should get the Jazz job now that Quinn Snyder resigned. We talk mostly about the finals. We also talk about, you know, if Golden State or, you know, not Golden State, what's going to happen in the West next year. Kyle actually talked about how the Warriors, they know their writing's on the wall, so they had to get this championship, and because next year it's probably not going to be easier, especially with the Clippers being fully healthy. Kawhi Leonard's coming back. Paul George is going to be 100% most likely. You can't sleep on the Lakers. They had a tough year last year, but they have a new coach. We'll see what happens there. Do they get rid of Anthony Davis? Do they get rid of Russell Westbrook? We talk a little bit about that, not quite as much as we did the last episode, but pretty much all NBA stuff, mostly finals. But we'd also talk about some of the things, like I said, the Jazz job still open. Who's going to take that job? Kenny Atkinson deciding to take the Hornets job and staying with the Warriors. Pretty much all that and some other things as well. So, again, check out the Baseline NBA podcast co-host Kyle Lee. He was great. Again, all the links will be down in the description below. Hopefully, we won't have the questions from Instagram this time. We probably won't have the sports lightning round either for this episode. Again, if you want to check out content all the time, check out my YouTube channel and TikTok. I'm pretty much uploading videos all the time there every day, at least once or twice. Usually on the weekends, it's usually five or six times. So again, check that out if you're not subscribed or not following, which most of you probably are. All right, again, thanks for listening, and let's get on to the interview. Before we start today's episode, I'd like to give a quick shout to our sponsor of today's video, and that sponsor is our good friends over at HelpYouFind.me. You're probably asking yourself, JJ, what is HelpYouFind.me? Well, I'll tell you what it is. Peter Sanchez, the founder, creator, and owner, was originally worried about his daughter and his mom always asking him for his travel details. HelpYouFind.me was initially created for collective peace of mind. 48 hours. These are the most critical moments to find you in the event of an emergency, or worse, waiting for the legal process to access your important history information, which can take up to weeks upon weeks upon weeks. With HelpYouFind.me, you have your own secure and encrypted digital If I Go Missing file that can give you your most trusted people access to virtual information much sooner than the authorities. Each person you share with that has its own access rules, and everything is completely encrypted. Not even helpyoufind.me can access it. This puts you in total control of your data. You can also update your location, submit photos, screenshots, and post random information or notes on the go. It's as easy as texting with a friend. To find out more information, go to helpyoufind.me. Also, don't forget to use the promo code down below in my description. If you use the promo code STP2021 to get 15% off your first order. Again, that promo code is STP2021 to get 15% off your first order. And go to, if you want more information, go to helpyoufind.me. And again, I'll put the link down in the description down below. All right, let's get back to the show. And now, on to an interview with Kyle Lee from the Baseline NBA podcast. All right, I am pleased to be joined by Kyle Lee, one of the hosts of the NBA Baseline podcast. How's it going, Kyle?
I'm good, man. How's it going?
It is going great. Again, thanks for coming on. We had some technical difficulties, but thankfully we were able to start recording. But before we start talking about the NBA Finals and the recap and the Warriors dominating the Celtics, at least in Game 6, if you want to tell a little bit about yourself and where we can find you, and all the links will be down in the description below, but you want to tell us where you're from and stuff like that?
Absolutely, man. First, thanks, JJ, for allowing me to jump on your show, Sports Town. It's awesome to be able to collaborate with people in this community of sports. And as such yourself, you know, the more that you continue to get to know people, the better, because it just builds more talk and conversation, which is exactly what you want in order to have a true, understanding of where we are when it comes to basketball, the culture and everything like that. So for myself, I'm a co-host for the Baseline NBA podcast. My co-host, partner in crime, my man Warren Shaw, and I, we're basically childhood friends. We grew up together. We love the sport of basketball. We've covered the sport of basketball in so many different variations. One day, some long time ago, we decided to say, "Hey, man, let's just put together a podcast and talk about what we want to talk about in regards to the NBA." And so for the last, 11 years, man, we've been doing the show on a weekly basis. People can always catch us on all of the major podcasting streams like, Apple, Stitcher, Spreaker. But if you really just want to go to the heart and, see all those type of episodes that we've done, we always tell people to go to www.thebaselinenba.com. That's where we host our shows. And we just, we go through everything. We talk all aspects of the game, not just about the game on the court, but also off the court as well too, because the NBA is a global brand, and mm-hmm. It is part of our culture. It's part of the lifestyle. So we try to, tweak and talk about all of those different aspects of things. And it's been awesome, man. It's been a great experience. It's afforded me opportunities to be able to get to know a lot of different people, not just in the media industry, but also in the game of basketball as well too. And we're still riding strong. And while this the sting of my Boston Celtics, our Boston Celtics, because Sean and I both are Boston Celtics fan, hurts in the fact that they got ousted by the Warriors, and I know we'll talk about that. I still, give all the credit to the world for the Celtics for coming in and competing. A lot of teams could have basically laid down to, a team as good as the Golden State Warriors, but they've proved to me a lot of things that I didn't expect them to prove this early. Coming up, and it looks for me, I look forward to the opportunity to try to enlighten some people a little bit while they may feel a little negative about what took place. I think that there's a lot of positive things that came out of this, and it makes me feel good to be a Boston Celtic regardless.
I mean, it was still good to see what the Celtics could do. I mean, no one thought they would even be, I think in December, I think they had a losing record at one time. So for them to go all the way to the NBA Finals is very impressive. And, they have a very young core and a very talented core led by Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. But let's go back to Golden State's side. They now have won their, fifth championship in the last, 9 years now? They've been, 15, 17, 18. I guess it'd be their fourth championship in 8 years. They've been there six times in 8 years. Where do you think, and I think this has already been clarified as a dynasty, or, people consider the Warriors having a dynasty right now. Where do you think their dynasty ranks among the entire, the time of the NBA? Where do you think their dynasty ranks among, do you think it's top five, top 10? I mean, where do you think it ranks?
I definitely think it's a top 10. I'm not going to go out and say that it's top five. But I'm not gonna point to, I think, too much of the cliche-ic versions of what justifies a dynastic basketball team, because I think people point a little bit too much to, well, the eras are different, they're more physical. Mm-hmm. That's all, that's played out. This is not what we're talking about. I think what we're talking about is, let's look at the metrics and let's look at where the rosters, what they achieved throughout the course of the regular seasons, all the way up until getting those championships. Are you putting them over the Chicago Bulls during the two eras of them winning back-to-back, you know, winning championships three times in a row? No, mm-hmm. because you can make the argument that the Golden State Warriors, while they had the best record, arguably in the regular season in the history of NBA basketball, fell short and didn't win a championship, right? Mm-hmm. You can make the argument that even as prolific as their core three were, from a defensive perspective, are their metrics better than the Bad Boy Pistons, right? Like, so there are a lot of things that, while I applaud, again, they are a dynasty. Make no mm-hmm. mistake about it. They are a dynasty. I am not going to go out on a limb and say that they are among the top five dynasties, even if they do have the four championships, because you can make the argument that while they have evolved in the way that they've played the game of basketball, part of why they have not sustained that level of success and dominance is, to me, part and parcel of what their makeup of their team has been. And when you measure that up against some of the teams that did go out and you know, create those dynasties, you can mm-hmm. name for name, right? There are Hall of Fame namers there, right? There are Hall of Fame rosters there, all the way going down to the seventh, eighth man. And so, and that's something that somewhat is lacking with the Warriors. You could make the argument, though, that given the way that things are in the free agent and the cap era, when it comes to basketball, that what Steve Kerr, what Myers, Lacob, Gruber, and company have been able to comprise in a level of consistency and high level of play has been awfully impressive. And I think maybe that might push them a little bit further. I'll put it like this. They're a lot closer to somewhere around the top five, like they're maybe just outside of it, rather than assuming they're on the far end of the top of where you are if you go top 10. That's mm-hmm. how I see the Golden State Warriors dynasty, in my opinion.
I think most people would agree with you. I think they are somewhere in the top 10, but to say top five, as you mentioned, is kind of hard because there's been so many good teams, and you could go way back in the 50s and 60s, and even though they didn't play with that many great, there wasn't that many teams back then, but the Celtics to win seven championships in a row is pretty impressive, right? And of course, you go back to the Bulls in the 90s, the Lakers in the 80s, the Spurs in the 2000s, and then they won again in 14. So there's a lot of dynasties out there, but yeah, I pretty much agree with what you're saying. They're somewhere in the top 10, but it's kind of hard to say top five because there's been a lot of dynasties. And this has been kind of another talking point. Curry finally got the finals MVP, right? That was the one thing he didn't have. Do you think he's a top 10 player of all time?
I see him somewhere around there. I think part of my concern is who is it that is in those same realms of conversations, and how many of those players go before him to get to this particular point? So mm-hmm. There's no question. I think you can make the argument that he is among one of the greatest shooting guards of all time, if not the greatest. He's probably one of the best point guards of all time. Albeit, mm-hmm. Again, this is part of where the problem lies. And I want to throw something in. I apologize. I don't want to be bouncing back and forth because you bring up a really good question. Let me say this about the Golden State Warriors, which I think for Warriors fans, they should really understand and liken themselves to understanding this. The Golden State Warriors, in my opinion, are the most intelligent basketball team in NBA history. Their basketball level IQ is what's afforded them the ability to win as many championships as they have in this time span. I think you'd be hard pressed to find other teams who have, when you look at their roster and you look at the way that they play the game of basketball, who have the mind and the intelligence to adapt and adjust and play the game the way that the Golden State Warriors have been able to play and be able to sustain it for as long as they have. That is why they're back where they are, again, winning this championship over a very talented Boston Celtics team and what mm-hmm. they did to get to that particular point. So I want to make sure that that's understood. Now, with that being said, that to me also bolsters the argument about where Steph Curry is when you talk about the greatest of all time. Because when you talk about the game of basketball and his ability to shoot, that's one aspect of it. But his intelligence and the way that he has adapted himself, he could easily just go out and score 50 points if that's what the game calls for. But he knows that there are other elements to the game, especially at the position that he plays, in which he has evolved in. And he has compensated for it by not being the most athletically gifted of the point guards that have actually played the game. But yet mm-hmm. you can make the argument that he's done it better than John Stockton. He's doing it better than Chris Paul. He's doing it better than a lot of people who are going to be in that conversation of greatest of all time at his position. And to say whether or not that doesn't mean that he does or doesn't get in the top 10, I know a lot of them are going to be wings and going to be bigs. You're not going to put a whole lot mm-hmm. of point guards in there. But I challenge anybody to say you don't have Steph Curry's name first in doing so, because of the fact that if it's not for him, this run that they're on doesn't happen at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that also brings up another point too, or another a good question. Do you think Curry is a top five point guard of all time?
I do. I think that he has put himself in that realm of the conversation. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I think really has to be highlighted is the fact that Steph Curry has altered the way that the point guard plays the position of basketball. Because mm-hmm. oftentimes we remember when Steph Curry first came in, I think his intent was to be a shooting guard. Mm-hmm. He came in when Monty Ellis was there and Baron Davis and those guys were there. And they were trying to revolutionize this way of playing the game. Once they had drafted and gotten Klay Thompson, and they realize what Klay Thompson can do as a two-way player, they recognize that the best way for Steph to thrive in Mark Jackson's offense is that he has to play the point. So Steph Curry had to basically, you know, evolve and change mm-hmm. his way coming out of Davidson to be a legitimate point guard, because they weren't going to be able to keep Monte Ellis, right? He was going to be out the door. And mm-hmm. so that was going to usher this new era of backcourt play for the Golden State Warriors, thus meaning that Steph had to change the dynamic of how he played the game. And when you look mm-hmm. at how point guards are asked upon now to even score the basketball the way that they do, typically they do all of that, but then they compromise the other elements to the game, which is what puts you in a position to play for championships. And Steph Curry has figured out a way to be able to do these things, even at his age, which he's like 34, right? At his age, he's improving his defensive metrics. He is assists. He rebounds the basketball. He may not go out there and rebound the ball like Russell Westbrook does, but he doesn't have to, right? Mm-hmm. But the rest of the way that he leads this basketball team, how he executes the offense, and then his ability to shoot and extend his shooting from way beyond three. It, to me, he's revolutionized the way that a point guard evolves in this current NBA climate. And that has to count for something when you talk about top five point guards of all time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's another good point, too, that you mentioned he was going to be a shooting guard. In today's day, especially, it's kind of more like positionless basketball. You have your best team, right? And you just look at Toronto, they do the same exact thing. But yeah, with Steph Curry, he does seem to be more of a shooting guard type of player, but he's got good handles, right? But it feels like he plays more like a shooting guard. But yeah, I mean, I would probably, I don't know if I'd put him in the top five, but I think most people would. But I mean, we'll see what happens. I mean, he still has a few years left and he could get one or two more championships. We'll see what happens. But, you know, the West is getting tougher. But right now they reign supreme at the moment. So let's go to Boston's side now. Boston had a 2-1 lead. What happened? You know, they played horrible in game six, right? They had a 15-2 lead earlier and they just basically let it go. And by the end of the first quarter, Golden State had the lead. What happened to Boston, and who do you think deserves the most blame for it, for them losing?
I mean, Boston basically ran out of steam, number mm-hmm. one. Number two, this is the byproduct of a team that didn't know how to play in an NBA Finals. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just pretty much what it comes down to. I mean, if we can sit here, we can blame it. Everyone wants to blame Jason Tatum. You know, they want to blame Doka. They want to blame Marcus Smart. This is all a collective loss, right? Everybody... This was what I had said this as far as my predictions go, and it may have seemed outlandish at the time, but I said if the Boston Celtics get past the Milwaukee Bucks, they're going to the NBA Finals. And I felt wholeheartedly in the way that they galvanized, they fought, and they did what literally could be the impossible. And I understand people are like, well, they didn't have Chris Middleton. I don't want to hear all of that. The Milwaukee Bucks are essentially playing the best defensive basketball team in the NBA, and they continued that going into the playoffs. And you'd be hard-pressed to tell me that the concern was them figuring out a way to stop Chris Middleton, when the ultimate concern, and always will be the ultimate concern, is how do you stop the most dominant player in the NBA in Giannis Antetokounmpo? And they figured out a way to do it. Defensively, the Boston Celtics did not make Giannis the most dominant player, right? And so going all the way that they did, and I don't care how long it took and how many games it took to get through the Miami Heat and what it got them to this point to play against the Golden State Warriors. The key to me about what happened with Golden State was Golden State has experience. Golden State has the ability that if they need to make adjustments, and Steve Kerr is not feeling arrogant, the Warriors aren't feeling arrogant, they're in the moment of understanding the magnitude of the dynasty that they're building here, they will go out and they will execute. The question is, if you are a more talented and a more athletically better team than the Boston Celtics, where do you find the discipline to stay within yourself to do exactly the things that got you to this point and maintain it for 48 minutes? And you can clearly see they were unable and incapable of doing that, you know, because they've never been in this moment. To get to this point, everyone just assumes, oh, just keep doing what you're doing. Easier said than done. When someone forces you to play outside of that element, how do you readjust? How do you counter that? That's exactly what great championship teams figure out and doing in a 7-game series. And the Warriors understood that. They weathered the storm. They took the best blows that the Boston Celtics had to offer. And yes, while Jason Tatum had a, pardon my French, piss poor performance of an NBA Finals, the argument could be made that the Celtics still figured out a way to fight and stay in every single game with the exception of game 6. You know what I'm saying? So to me, ultimately, blame, yes, I just don't see it as one person. I think it's collective. I think Udoka could have made some adjustments at certain times when the Celtics were running ragged. There were moments where I feel like from a player perspective, they were not, you know, they were not doing what got them there, which is punishing teams who played them small. You know, when they were playing big, not utilizing the height at times, selling out way too much on teams who shoot the basketball particularly well. I just think that there were just the times where the Celtics had opportunities to really maximize what made them as good as they were. They just didn't put it together and they didn't stay disciplined, which is exactly what you look at a Warriors team. Part of the reason is, are the Warriors just that damn good, or they at times just beat themselves? And at times you can clearly see they could be that damn good when they understand the moment of what goes on. And that's that typically is what happened here when it came to the Celtics. They lost themselves in the moment and they couldn't hold what made them as good as they've been, you know, second half all the way through up until the finals.
And here's an interesting too. I think this is basically two questions here, but you know, Marcus Smart is great. He won the Defensive Player of the Year, but he really struggled in the series against the Warriors, right? Do you think Boston, a huge part of the reason why they lost was because they didn't have a true point guard? And do you think in the offseason they need to address that position?
This has been a problem for the Boston Celtics, not just with Marcus Smart, but over the last 5 years, okay? Mm-hmm. They had an opportunity to settle on that with Isaiah Thomas, and they quickly realized that Isaiah Thomas was not healthy enough for them to sustain giving the kind of money that they did, albeit I still think you take that risk because he got you, him and that team got you to the Eastern Conference Finals. This team has been in the Eastern Conference Finals basically, what, 3 out of 5, 4 out of 6 years, right, under Tatum and Brown. And ultimately, they've been doing it with this, point guard by committee thing that they've been doing. And all the way up until this particular point, it actually amazes me. I'm not, and don't take offense when I say this. It amazes me that we are still at this point where everyone still doesn't want to make or doesn't buy into the idea of Marcus Smart is a point guard. That was what he was drafted as when he came out of Oklahoma State. Is he the prototypical point guard of what you see in the current climate of today's NBA? No, by no stretch of the imagination. But let me get, you know, my people, let me get you to pontificate about this. If we go back to 2008, when the Boston Celtics had Kevin Garnett and Ray Allen and Paul Pierce, I don't recall them having a Chris Paul on their roster. I don't recall them having a Steve Nash on their roster. They had a kid named Rajon Rondo on their roster. And then when I last saw that kid couldn't shoot the ball worth a lick. But what he couldn't do in shooting, he made up for in leadership. And the Celtics needed leadership at that point guard position in order for them to go out and win that championship. You see what I'm saying? So to me, while people didn't buy into Rajon being that prototypical point guard of what that point guard looked like in the current climate of that NBA, the same argument could be made about Marcus Smart. And I feel like Ime Udoka has done an excellent job of figuring out how to utilize the strengths of Marcus Smart and getting him to buy into himself being an actual point guard to this roster. Now, will that translate in long term? That's what we have to wait and see. But I don't want to say I take offense. It just kind of bugs me that he proved that he can be a point guard for this Celtics team, for what this Celtics team is doing and what they needed, right? So why is it so far-fetched that he can continue to ascend in that direction? Maybe it took this long for him to figure out where he fits when we talk about point guards and what is required for that role for the Celtics and their two superstar players. And so what I want to see is the growth in Marcus Smart showing that he deserves to be a starting point guard and that he can build on top of what he did getting them to the NBA finals, because that's that can't be overlooked. He is a big reason why the Celtics are in the NBA finals. And I think that you have to stick with that instead of using the easy fix to say, well, we can find a better point guard than Marcus Smart to come do what it was that we didn't get them to do collectively in the finals. You're asking for trouble. They tried doing that, bringing in Kyrie Irving, and you could see the mess that that created. So I don't want to see the Celtics doing something or try to reinvent something that they know that they true wholeheartedly are not committed to doing unless they're going to do it right.
And what do you think Boston needs to do in this, in the offseason, in order to get back to the finals? You can keep it going there.
Oh, no. You were saying, what do we need to do to get back to the finals?
Yeah. Well,
if I can get a version of the same version of Al Horford, I don't know if we have to do a whole lot, but I'm realistic. Father Time is going to catch up with Al Horford. And we definitely are going to need, we need to definitely get more extensive scoring in the front court. Okay. Also as well too, we need better shooting from our bench. That is something that we sorely lack with this team. Yeah, we got some good contributions from Derek White and from Grant Williams. Peyton Pritchard has come on. I really want to see Peyton Pritchard take a step up. But if you're going to tell me that there is a really great quality guard out there that you can go and throw some money, maybe a swing guy that you could throw some money at and bring on the fold who can actually help the Celtics shoot the basketball more consistently. It's ironic because this team wants to shoot the three. I am so not into that idea of it, because this team to me can do so much better punishing teams in the paint, but they don't commit to that. So if you're going to shoot the three, fine, go all in and get guys who can shoot you the three. If there's a way that you can figure out maybe bringing a Duncan Robinson on that team, although I would not take on his salary. But if you're going to bring me a guy that can show you that he can shoot that basketball straight up off the wing, coming off of the bench and really helping to contribute, he's a solid piece that I would like to see to the Celtics. You don't have to add much. If this team commits themselves to being the same great defensive team that they showed us in the second half of this season going through, you don't have to do a whole lot. But I definitely think that they have to improve their ability to shoot the basketball. And a lot of that, I think, is going to come from their bench more so than I do think it's going to come from their starting lineup.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting. That's an interesting point that you said the bench needs to get better, because Derek White was solid for a while, but you could definitely tell that toward the end of the finals he was struggling. Same thing with Peyton Pritchard. Grant Williams is nice, but yeah, getting a bench probably would definitely be – would really help Boston at least get back to where they were this season. So one more question about Boston. Is Jason Tatum a top 10 player, or where do you rank Jason Tatum currently?
So – Jason Tatum to me is like right on the outskirts. I think he's probably 11 to 12. Look, there's no question he should be top five soon, right? Like he should already be top five. But there's a problem that I always have with Jason Tatum, and it's still a work in progress, is his ability to be aggressive. You see flashes of it. You see he's capable of scoring 52 points in a game. No problem, right? But a lot of it is based on his ability to be aggressive. And there are just tendencies with him where he dances with the basketball. And I think this is part of the reason why he needs a point guard. He needs to worry more about being quick and decisive with his decisions, because teams are going to load up and they respect his mid-range game. They respect his long-range game. he has got to start becoming a more north-south type of basketball player. Now, he gave us glimpses of this from time to time, but I think he himself, he overthinks himself. He doesn't, you know, it's amazing because he spent that time playing with Kobe Bryant, and the evolution of Kobe Bryant was he stopped messing around. He stopped dancing with dudes and started really going at them. And so I want to see that become the next level of Jason Tatum. If he does that, no question, top 10, possibly top five player in the game of basketball, because it's funny how we're trying to usher Devin Booker in that conversation. And I think that those two guys are kind of neck and neck when you look at their scoring prowess. I also kind of give the edge a little bit to Jason Tatum because I think he plays a solid defense for a guy who plays that wing. You know, his versatility to play two, three, four guys in the rotation, as far as his ability to switch, that gives the luxury of Udoka, allowing the Celtics to constantly switch the switch from time to time defensively. So to me, those metrics I think matter, but I just want to see more from him from the offensive side of the ball to be aggressive.
And do you think Giannis Antetokounmpo is the best player right now? Because I think a lot of people are pointing to that, but what do you think? Or if you don't think Giannis is the best player, then who do you think is?
Man, I say that Giannis is the most dominant player in basketball. What that means is, as far as being the best, I think it depends on the timing. You know, if we're talking about in the playoffs, well, if his team is advancing to the finals, then that means he is the best player in basketball. But he's also proven as well too that even with him as being as dominant as he is, he does not execute right as efficiently as most other top players have a tendency to do. Man, if I best player in basketball.
Well, for so many years, we used to say, oh, LeBron's the best player, right? But now it's kind of like LeBron is still in there, but he's just not the same guy because he's clearly, he still has some left, but he's kind of past his prime already. He's what, 37? So it is kind of harder to say now because for so many years, we just said LeBron. So, I mean,
if you ask me who the best player in basketball, I say it reluctantly because he doesn't give the max effort to me from time to time. And if he gets taken out of games, I think he takes himself out of it. But he's proven that when in line, you literally can't stop him. That would be Kevin Durant. But again, my problem with Durant is that if he lacks, I feel like, leadership ability. That when he needs to truly take over games, regardless of the circumstances, situation, if it's not right, he ain't right. And when he ain't right, the team just looks all god awful. I think the second person in line is Giannis, right? When it comes to the ability to just take over games and dominate, you'd be hard pressed to tell me that Giannis isn't that dude. So, you know, let me retract my thought. I'm going to say Giannis is the best player in the game of basketball, just simply because you will never outwork Giannis. You will never outwork his ability to defend in key situations. You will never outwork his ability to score the basketball. And maybe his overzealousness might get the better of him, but I probably would take that 9 times out of 10 from a player in a critical situation than a dude who kind of checks himself out if he ain't in his rhythm, if he ain't feeling it. You know, that pretty much is where I would line myself with that.
Well, another player that people have kind of forgotten about, and I've mentioned him a little bit in the podcast, but he missed the whole season last year, but he's a 2-time finals MVP. Where do you put Kawhi Leonard? Because at one time people were saying he was one of the better players. It just kind of, people, I think, kind of forgot about him because he missed this whole season. But where do you put Kawhi in these best player in the best player in the league?
He's top five. I mean, let's be realistic. We don't know what version of Kawhi Leonard is going to return to be, right? And we've seen where injuries like what Kawhi has been suffering with guys like Klay Thompson, because you can make the argument right now that Klay Thompson, if he was healthy, would have been a top 15 player in the NBA, right? He probably the high teens, you know, closer to the top 10 more than anything else. But these injuries have taken its toll on him, and you can see how his legs are still not underneath him. He's not quite 100%, and you can make the argument that even Steph Curry's defense from time to time helped Klay Thompson, you know, stabilize or neutralize a little bit of what the Boston Celtics were doing in the finals. So I say all of that to say we don't know what version of Kawhi Leonard is. But if Kawhi Leonard is anything prior to the injuries that he suffered before coming to the Los Angeles Clippers, there is no question he would be top three. I would make the argument that he's better than LeBron James. I don't care how great LeBron James is. When you talk about efficiency and overall dominance of a game of basketball, Kawhi Leonard pretty much checked all those boxes. And he has proven that he can defend LeBron James. He can defend Giannis Antetokounmpo. He could defend anybody from the Golden State Warriors on their best night. So, yeah, I mean, if we're talking old Kawhi, no doubt. But I don't think that's there. I do feel like probably his the best of his best years. I think there's still good, solid years ahead of him, and he can dominate. But I don't see that being like top three status until he actually gets on that basketball court and shows, you know, he's still capable of executing in that kind of fashion.
Yeah, well, I mean, you just kind of mentioned LeBron, right, and Kawhi. And every time they go against each other, it seems like LeBron still has a great night. But at the end of the day, Kawhi's team usually wins. I think Kawhi has a winning record when he takes on LeBron. I think he did the same thing with Giannis a few years ago, and the Bucks had the best record. Kawhi shut him down. And, of course, that was a team effort, too. Toronto played great. But, I mean, Kawhi was the big reason why they won. So I can't wait till he comes back. You know, I'm kind of biased a little bit for him because he's my favorite player. But at the same time, he's just – when he's healthy and when he's on, he's one of the best players in the league. I would definitely agree with you there.
I think Tyronn Lue might also agree to that sentiment as well, too. He cannot wait for Kawhi. Listen, heck of a job by Tyronn Lue to stabilize this Los Angeles Clippers team to still compete while not having him on the basketball court. And also for, you know, really helping to elevate Paul George. He was basically mired in the doldrums of overhypeness as far as, you know, him being a legit two-way player, you know, being that next piece that next to Kawhi to help, you know, elevate them to, and you can look at and see that there's a different side to Paul George. Now, I don't know whether or not that's going to click, you know, as far as can these two guys at the height of their abilities really help elevate the Los Angeles Clippers to what people were expecting, which is them competing for championships. But again, if I'm Tyronn Lue, I probably want to have that kind of problem, you know, still, rather than some of the other problems that other teams have to deal with regards to roster and star contributions and things of that nature. You know, this is, I think, the reason why a lot of people are kind of high on the Clippers seriously being able to contend if they can get some kind of guarantee that Kawhi Leonard is going to be 100%. And this version of Paul George we've seen over the last 2 years will continue to be that same type of player next to Kawhi Leonard when he returns.
I mean, PG was great in Game 5 and Game 6 against the Jazz. Kawhi goes out, and then they took a Suns team all the way to 6 games, which was very impressive. And imagine if you have a healthy Kawhi Leonard, we might be saying the Clippers were going to take on the Bucks. And that would have been interesting to see another Kawhi versus Giannis. But, I mean, and you know, what the Clippers did this year was incredible to go 42-40, and Paul George missed most of the season too. And, of course, they kind of struggled there in the play-in tournaments where they played excellent in the third quarter, and they were completely gassed in the fourth. But if they can do that and then have a healthy Kawhi Leonard and a healthy Paul George for most of the season, the Clippers are going to be a scary team. And we'll see what happens with the Lakers and the, I don't know what's going to happen with the Suns, but you know, the West, it's going to be again really good next year.
Oh, absolutely. So, which is, I think, the reason why, you know, the Warriors, they know the writing on the wall. They know that this window is closing. And I said, the reason why I had more confidence about the Celtics possibly winning this championship was because I believe that they were the more athletically talented basketball team than the Golden State Warriors. And that the only thing that the Warriors had going for them was the fact that their basketball IQ and their ability to play poised basketball, because they've been down this road before. But I think that they would have had problems with the Memphis Grizzlies. I think they would have had problem with any team that shows athleticism over them, that can play over the top of them, you know, but when teams play sloppy, right? When you play sloppier than the Golden State Warriors, you give yourself no chance to win. And then that's essentially what the Boston Celtics did. Like when the Boston Celtics basically are coughing the ball up plus 18, 20, 21 in games, you're not winning against the Warriors. You know, typically the Warriors are a high risk, high reward basketball team with the way that they turn the ball over. So under no circumstances, if you're the Boston Celtics and you play sound basketball, or you're any team that's playing against the Golden State Warriors, you should be not turning the ball over as much as they do, mm-hmm. right? And so that to me is, I think, ultimately the key. You're going to see more disciplined teams give the Golden State Warriors fits. And that's teams like the Los Angeles Clippers. I feel like teams that are just much more sound in mm-hmm. understanding how the Warriors operate, how they play, and using a lot of what they do against them. Mm-hmm. You find teams like that are capable of doing that. The Phoenix Suns can come to mind. I know everyone is completely down on them, but when you have a veteran point guard and you've got quality shooters and you've got versatility up and down the lineup. Now there's a big question with DeAndre Ayton and what's going to happen with him. But mm-hmm. I still think that with Monty Williams and those guys, they are going to be a thorn in the side for the Golden State Warriors. Does that mean I think that the Warriors won't return? No. I'm just saying that I think teams need to watch out for when you have more athletically built teams to play against a style of play like the Warriors, you can beat them. They can be an Achilles heel for their ability to not get more athletic. The one thing I will say, though, about the Warriors is they got Kuminga, they've got Moody. And so seeing how Kerr develops these guys and you know, they got Gary Payton the second now on that team, they have now started to bolster up their athleticism. So how mm-hmm. they deploy them and use them up and down this roster, I think, is key. And I think we're seeing a trend. We're seeing teams turn a corner that while it's great getting guys who can jack up shots, if you don't have players that are playing above the rim, mm-hmm. you're doing yourself a disservice in order to be versatile, in order to compete in this climate of the NBA.
Mm-hmm. And then you also talked about Golden State's team, and this guy was got another guy like James Wiseman, right? He's been really injury prone, but imagine if he can actually be healthy. He was the number two overall pick, so yeah, he's another guy too. And then you were just mentioning the Memphis Grizzlies. I mean, imagine if Ja Morant doesn't get hurt, that series probably goes to seven, and maybe Memphis wins it all. Probably not, because the experience was huge. But you know, a guy like Ja Morant, who I think could be the MVP next season. So. We'll see what happens. But yeah, the West, it's not getting any easier, that's for sure. Speaking of the West, though, the Jazz are still looking for a new head coach. Of course, the shocking news, I think it was a week or two ago now, Quinn Snyder resigned. It was a little surprising, too, because he was rumored to be wanting the Lakers job, and that job had already been filled. What did you think about Quinn Snyder resigning, and who do you think should be the next best option for the Jazz for their next head coach?
So Quinn Snyder resigning, I think it's more the fact that he resigned more so than I think the team and him just parting ways and just mm-hmm. admitting to the fact that they're going a different direction. I think his run, his time was up. Not to say that this was his fault. It's just clearly the Jazz have a different perception about what they want from that basketball team and what Quinn Snyder can actually do with the roster that it was given mm-hmm. to him. Sometimes it just doesn't click. It's ironic because while I agree with you that I would love to see Quinn Snyder probably have been the head coach for the Los Angeles Lakers, I'm more high on the fact that the Lakers pulled the trigger and got Darvin Ham as the head mm-hmm. coach. With that being said, I think it would be great to see Quinn Snyder really work coach the Charlotte Hornets. I would mm-hmm, love to see him work with LaMelo Ball. And if there's a commitment to them bringing back Miles Bridges, I see him doing some really good things for the Charlotte Hornets. And I know we're going to get into the whole thing regarding Kenny Atkinson in a sec. But to me, if I'm looking at another head coach who I really think can help that Utah Jazz team, I know it sounds kind of crazy, but I kind of like Terry Stotts over there. Mm-hmm. I just think that he has a good feel for, taking marginal talented guys, getting them to contribute. And I think that might open up the door again for the Utah Jazz to probably go out there and see if they can get a really committed player from free agency and go back to doing what they do best, which is they get it from their draft picks. You know, mm-hmm. they get the homegrown talent to come in and do what's necessary. Now, does that mean give up on Donovan Mitchell? I don't think so. But I don't see the dynamic between Mitchell and Gobert working anymore. So you're mm-hmm. going to have to give up one of those two dudes. And if you're giving up Gobert, you got to get a commitment from Mitchell that's where he wants to be. Mm-hmm. He wants to be with the Utah Jazz. And I would not sit here and play games with that. They need that commitment from him. If he wants to be there, all right, now you know what you're working with. Mm-hmm. But if he's kind of hedging his bets, then go get what you can get from him and just go ahead and re-up like you always do. There's nothing wrong with the Jazz suffering a year or two because the margin of error for the Western Conference is so close, so marketably close. Mm-hmm. What you can't afford to do is be tied down with players who are just not committed to play. Because Utah is a different animal out there, right? And it's mm-hmm. a different fan base. It's understood. You know, you gotta have a flair for wanting to be out there in Mormon Stateville, right? You know what I'm saying? So, but the Utah Jazz always competes. They always upset the apple cart. So, but they're not going to be able to do with the current roster they got.
Yeah. And I would think that, you know, Donovan Mitchell is a star, right? But if I was the Jazz, I would trade Gobert over Mitchell. Would you do the same or?
Oh, no, absolutely. I think Rudy Gobert is a great player. I think he mm-hmm. he can definitely help contribute for teams that are certainly lacking in size. Like, mm-hmm. you know, as far as front court play goes, who are not sound defensively. I don't think that he, you know, makes up all of the flaws. But you need something down there in the blocks, mm-hmm. right? You need somebody to keep dudes honest. He still has the ability to extend defensively, close out on guys from the perimeter shot and stuff like that. You're just not, you know, just don't expect him to go out there and drop you 25 points per night, right? Like mm-hmm. I know that's what they want to get with bigs. That should not be the expectation when you bring a guy like Rudy Gobert mm-hmm. into the fold. I think it's going to be an established team that knows that they just need to shore things up defensively, get some, you know, a guy who's lanky, and can, you know, cause havoc grabbing rebounds. You know, I wouldn't even, I know it's way too early to say this because of how he plays. Listen, guys like Andre Drummond played backup for Joel Embiid, you know, mm-hmm. and still played significant minutes to the point where now he, you know, he was a starting, you know, center with the Brooklyn Nets. You know, if I'm Brooklyn, maybe I entertain that idea a little bit. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Maybe not the expense of giving up everything, but you know, regardless, to me, you got to move Gobert first if you can.
Yeah, I agree too, because I feel like Donovan Mitchell is good, and there seems to be a disconnect with Mitchell and Gobert ever since the pandemic, right? So I think, and you know, Quinn Snyder did an excellent job, but I think at the same time, but it was interesting too, because reports were that they wanted to give him an extension, but he said he would just rather leave. But I guess, too, with the Hornets job opening, I feel like that's the best option right now. And I think Terry Stotts was also in the running for the Hornets job when they chose Kenny Atkinson. Now that Kenny Atkinson is no longer, he decided to change his mind. But speaking of Kenny Atkinson, he, of course, today at the time of this recording was on Saturday. He went out and said that he changed his mind, doesn't want to be in Charlotte, doesn't want to be the head coach of Charlotte. Were you surprised by that hire? Surprised by that move? Because I was.
Well, I was surprised definitely that, you know, he didn't feel it was the best fit for him, but then I don't blame him. You know, one of the things that we talked about in our previous episode of the Baseline is the fact that while I think that it was a good hire by the Charlotte Hornets, I don't think that it was the best hire. Mm-hmm. I just thought it was a lateral move for what you were already getting from Borrego, you know, mm-hmm. so, and it's not to knock Kenny Atkinson. I just think that the current roster, the way that it's constructed, to me, you're just asking Kenny Atkinson to sustain. I don't think he's going to elevate the roster to some degree where they're now becoming a top four team in the Eastern Conference. Mm-hmm. What you need is somebody that's going to innovate. And so if you weren't going to hire D'Antoni, and to me, it shocked me that they didn't consider Quinn Snyder. But mm-hmm. Quinn Snyder is an offensive guru. And even as an offensive guru, he proved that he can even coach a team to play better defensively. Aren't these the things that you want for a young, mm-hmm. brash, marketably improved basketball team in the Charlotte Hornets? That's what I would expect. Mm-hmm. So I feel at times the Charlotte organization, my man Shaw said it succinctly. He says they're very frugal when mm-hmm. it comes to their hiring process. They don't want to pony up, you know, for a guy who, yeah, his name may come with a little bit of baggage, but that's probably the kind of baggage worth, you know, picking up if you're trying to travel places. You know, mm-hmm. so that to me is the key. You know, if the Charlotte Hornets are going to revisit this and look at, you know, other people, you know, I'd say seriously take a second look at Quinn Snyder, because I think that mm-hmm. Quinn Snyder coaching up LaMelo Ball, and if the Charlotte Hornets make a commitment to keeping a Miles Bridges, you know, I know they got to figure out what to do with Gordon Hayward and such, but you know, to me, I think that if you're really serious about Charlotte being on the map, You got to put a name brand head coach on that roster. You gotta have somebody there that's going to innovate these guys, let them go out and play the game that they're already playing pretty well that got them to the play-in, you know, this past season, you know. Mm-hmm. But lateral move head coaches, to me, unless they're strategically geniuses, you know, it's not going to do Charlotte any good. It's not going to do the market any good. It's not going to do the fan base any good. So, you know, Charlotte, man, step up your game, man. Go get that dude.
Yeah, I mean, they have a rising young talent in LaMelo Ball, and maybe within 2 or 3 years he's going to leave and probably maybe go to LA. So you want to keep him, and then in order to keep him, you got to start winning games, and they're improving. But I feel like Charlotte's always been kind of that mediocre team that really nobody cares about. They're a small market, so of course it doesn't help them. But
yeah, they do just enough. Yeah, they do just enough to to be relevant, but they don't do anything to put themselves over the top. They haven't done that since they had, you know, Grandmama and Zoe, you know. And I know they've had good iterations of basketball teams when they've had Kemba Walker and, you know, also, but they've not gone all in, you know. Exactly, they hedge their bets way too much. And you can't do that with a talent like LaMelo Ball. You simply can't. There's no one is going to stay there long enough when they know that you're not going to go out there and take the risk. You look at the Atlanta Hawks. They're going all out because they've got Trae Young. They realize that, because it won't take much for Trae Young to say, I'm giving you the deuces. I'm going to go somewhere where I think they're going to pony up what they need for me to be in a position to go help them win championships. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's going to be interesting, too, because they have a solid team. I mean, they have LaMelo Ball, as we've mentioned. They have Terry Rozier. They have, well, hopefully they're going to have Miles Bridges. If I was them, I would probably see if I could somehow get rid of Gordon Hayward, because that contract is massive. And he seems like he can't stay healthy. So I would see, I think once they do hire a coach, they probably need to figure out if they can get rid of Gordon Hayward or something. But I mean, Charlotte definitely has the tools. I mean, they're getting better, but I feel like they need them. You know, the management, as you mentioned, needs to step up. So,
hey, look, if I'm Charlotte, why not get a 2-for-1-er, man? See if you can get Rudy Gobert on that team. Mm-hmm. You know, they need a legit center. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And LaMelo Ball is a kind of guy in open transition. He will get that ball to Rudy Gobert. He will make Rudy Gobert look like Clint Capella, T2 style. You know what I'm saying? Like, so just to me, but that's the thing. Like, Charlotte has to start thinking outside of the box. They have to start reimagining what they need to do to establish competitiveness in the climate of this NBA. That's the only way that they're going to be able to be successful. And I think that's the only way that they're going to be able to keep the talent that they currently have on their roster.
All right. Again, thanks again for coming on, Cal. Before we end the interview, and again, thanks for coming on. Is there anything else you want to mention before we end the show?
No. I mean, look, JJ, man, thanks for having me hop on with you, man. This has been awesome. Hopefully this will not be the last time. And you know, I hopefully, especially on our show, the Baseline NBA podcast, where we love bring people on board to, you know, really chop it up and talk NBA, all aspects of it, man. I just am really fortunate and glad that we were able to make this happen. And, you know, again, for our listeners and for your listeners as well, too, if you're really interested in hearing more of what not myself, but also my co-host, Warren Shaw, who I do the show with as well, go to www.thebaselinenba.com. On Twitter, it's at NBA Baseline. And if you want to get at me, man, you know, you can always hit me up on the Twitter at Gameface Lee, and my boys is at Shaw Sports NBA. So, yeah, man, just thanks for having me jump on, man. This has been awesome. I hope we do it again soon.
All right, again, thanks for coming on, Cal. Again, you can go out and check the NBA Baseline podcast. All the links will be down in the description below. All right, thanks again for coming on, Cal, and enjoy the draft, which is next, I think, this Thursday. Next Thursday, and then the off season, which is always crazy with free agency and stuff like that.
Absolutely, man. All right, you have a great weekend as well. Thanks, JJ.
Thank you.
All right, that's the show. Can't thank you enough for listening to the Sportstown podcast. We really appreciate it. Check us out on Instagram and Facebook at Sportstown_podcast or on Twitter at SportstownPod. We release new episodes every week. Thanks for listening and have a wonderful day. Here's some independent music to send you into the greatest week of all time.